Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. It is 2025 and Donald Trump is president once again of the United States. We will, of course, be following the moves of the Donald and his second administration very closely. However, it won't just be politics for us this year. We'll also talk a lot and cover American culture, life, and the arts. I should also remind you, because my producer Natasha will not let me hear the end of it, that we are on Spectator TV. So head to our YouTube channel to watch that. Today we're going to be talking about Donald Trump and South Africa, because as the world now knows, there was an extraordinary press conference, yet another extraordinary press conference in the Oval Office yesterday between Donald Trump and the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. It's hard to know where to begin, really, because there's been so much talk about it. Donald Trump unveiled some evidence, or what he regards as evidence, about the persecution of white farmers in South Africa. And the South African delegation didn't take very well to it. And the scenes were quite extraordinary.
So you denounced that type of language in the video that you saw?
Oh, yes. We've always done so. As government, as my own party, we are completely opposed to that. We, in 1955, adopted a document which said South Africa belongs to all who live in it.
But why wouldn't you arrest that man? That man said, kill the white farmers, kill the white farmers. And then he danced, and he's dancing, and it's kill the white farmers. I think, I'm not sure, but I think if somebody got up in Parliament and started saying, kill a certain group of people, he would be arrested very quickly. That man is going all over South Africa, and that's not a small party. That was a stadium that holds 100,000 people, and I hardly saw an empty seat. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of representation. And those crosses, we have dead white people, dead white farmers, mostly. And you take a look at Australia. They're being inundated, and we're being inundated with people that want to get out. And their farm is valueless. It's valueless. And they just want to get out with their life. And this is a very serious situation.
To discuss this story, I'm delighted to be joined by a South African who is in South Africa, in Cape Town at the moment, who also happens to be Elon Musk's father. Errol Musk is joining us now. Errol, let's start with your verdict on the press conference, because you've already spoken to Spectator about it, but our TV viewers might not be aware.
Well, you know, it was very good what Trump did, very, very good. And, you know, I take my hat off to him. I mean, something quite unprecedented in the Oval Office, and something that had to be done to, put an end to the lies and the fabrication that's held up in front of everybody. And the reality is, in fact, what Trump showed. And, the numbers that he quoted are not right. The actual numbers are well over 4,000 farmers killed and murdered, gruesomely murdered. Often older couples. And, to get an idea, the talk was, is this, genocide? If you take the population density of the areas where this took place, the total population in the areas where this took place is small. It's probably in the vicinity of 20,000. So 4,000 of 20,000 is, to my mind, quite close to being called genocide. And certainly we feel it like that. And if you look at the crosses that they ran between two towns and a city, it would be the same as having a line of crosses on both sides of the road from Bath to Bristol, And if you had that in England, I think people would then take note. if you had a continuous line of crosses on both sides of the road, all the way from Bath, which I know quite well, and Bristol, where I spent time as a child, that would be quite something. So the lie has to be put to this ANC government. They went in there smiling, thinking they're going to get another free handout from the stupid United States. They took a couple of celebrity golfers in with the idea that this was going to so impress Donald Trump that he would be so gleeful and happy to jump up just to be able to see these, meet these golfers. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, if it wasn't so pathetic, it would be insulting, you know. Yeah. But he didn't, Trump and my son did not go into the other aspects, such as the destructive nature of BEE in his country. And the hundreds, well over 100 laws, which push people of ability out of jobs without talking about race. They just get pushed out because inevitably it's race, and being replaced by people with no qualifications, no ability whatsoever. And then the result is that our country, which was, you know, when the ANC took over, a first world country, most certainly not a first world country anymore, you know. So, you know, we all feel it. The general feeling is you've got to get out, which is lousy, because in my case, my ancestors came here in the 1600s. So it's difficult for a lot of people to leave, you know.
Well, you mentioned your son, and there's a lot of speculation as to the extent to which your son Elon is influencing Trump on this matter, which he does seem very exercised about. You've spoken to The Spectator about it already, but to what extent do you think Elon is raising this issue with Trump, bringing it to his attention?
Well, I don't think, you know, there's been so many groups that have gone to the United States from here. You know, very well-organized groups have gone to the State Department over and over and over, providing as much information as they can there. I would imagine Elon, you know, he left South Africa 35 years ago. The last time he was here was 5 years ago. He's really, you know, spent more of his life in America than he has in South Africa. But at the end of the day, he is obviously South African. He knows the situation. He knows we all had to get out, which helped us in a way, because America was much better for my children than it would have been here, for their type of work, I mean. But, you know, he knows, and no doubt they would ask him. And I also, of course, give him the information I have from this side. And, you know, I point out to him, you know, when they were saying there are no farm murders, this last weekend, four couples were murdered on their farms this past weekend. So four men and four women. So I passed that on to him.
I'm very struck watching this story by the exhaustive fact-checking that goes on of Donald Trump's statements. And it does look as though on a few points Trump was not saying the correct thing. I mean, for instance, he called it burial sites. And in fact, you've already mentioned it.
That's just a silly mistake.
That's just a silly mistake.
They are pseudo-burial sites. Yeah. So one could quite easily accept the fact that they are pseudo-burial sites.
Yes.
In as much as you would put a plaque up for somebody.
They're symbolic. And other thing that the media have picked up on is that he was holding up a story which had, in fact, a picture from the Congo and not South Africa. What do you make of that fact-checking? Do you think...
I don't believe that at all. That's nonsense. No, that's nonsense. No, it showed pictures. No. In fact, I'm quite surprised that he showed so few pictures, because the actual pictures would, you know, be about 4 feet high, you know, off the floor, if you had them all, you know. So that, you know, he was given pictures, no doubt. I that's just a silly comment. No, they are actually, the murders are real. You know, let's not play footsie here. They're terrible, terrible, terrible murders. And we all fear all the time for people on the farms. I was attacked on a farm. You know, I was attacked. Had my little girl with me. She was 6 years of age. And they tried to kill us, open fire on us right away in the house. I killed three of them.
Well, I'm
and the rest are still running. I think they're in Cairo now.
Well, I'm struck by that. I'm also struck by another point that is made, or has been made a lot in the last 24 hours, that there's a lot of crime in South Africa, and the majority of people who are killed are black, not white. You hear that argument made quite often. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to know what the statistics are, because among the blacks, I don't believe statistics are kept. You know, the white people obviously become aware of those that are killed. But among the blacks, it's very difficult to understand what the statistics are. I imagine it could well be like that. I don't know. But certainly they're not blacks who are being killed as farm owners or anything like that. If you take the city in which I'm living, I had some friends here over Easter, and I mean, I had people, my children, two of my daughters from America and some people from America. We were talking about this very thing a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, you have these shootings in America, but we have them, you know, occasionally, these terrible shootings in America, but we have them every week. We have them every day here in Cape Town, which is listed as the fourth most dangerous city in the world. And in fact, I then said to them, look, we'll look at this last weekend, which was a bit unfair because it was Easter weekend. But over Easter weekend, looking at the statistics for Cape Town, 93 people were shot dead in Cape Town over Easter weekend. Mm. And I imagine those are in the, you know, what we call the Cape Flats, which is a sort of mixed race area, if you know what I mean.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's possible. But that doesn't take away the fact that they are actually calling in front of hundreds of thousands in stadiums to kill the farmers, kill the boer, kill the farmers, kill the farmers. I mean, and they teach the children at school, kill the farmers, kill the farmers. This is not a joke. It's not some sort of, you know, quirky joke. It's real.
Well, Ramaphosa's defence on that was that this is government. This is not government policy. This is an opposition party, a radical left-wing opposition party. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, the government has been so badly run, and so much money has been stolen from the government. You know, to enrich these people, mostly, you know, these ANC people have all become, you know, multimillionaires. How, you know, of course we know how. But they, you know, money that's sending grants from your country and other countries goes into their pockets. And the taxes paid here also are simply frittered away. Mm. And so we don't have a good government departments anymore. We don't have railways anymore. We don't have an airline anymore. We don't have home affairs to speak of anymore. We don't have hospitals for the state hospitals anymore. We don't have just about everything that you can think of, we don't have. And one of the things we don't have anymore is an effective police force. Where I live, for example, we hire a private, because we're a white community, assume, but anybody can live here. You know, it's open to anybody to live here. But we have private police force, you see. We have three private police forces in this town. And we have to have that, and we pay for that. But because the actual police simply don't exist. They don't respond to anything. They don't charge you for anything. They don't follow up on anything. They have no training. So that's what's happened. So in areas, and it was mentioned in this meeting, in areas, rural areas, there are no police at all. Nothing. You're on your own. And so if a chap like yourself came here and said, I found a good farm, I'm going to farm, I'm going to do this or other, something like that. And I would say to you, you know, are you well armed? Are you well armed? I would be speaking to you. And I would, if you went with, you know, your a companion, a wife, perhaps, I would warn her, you know, to say, look, you can't be alone in the house if your husband goes into the fields. You know, I mean, you're looking for trouble, in other words.
You mentioned the Cape Flats. They came up in the Oval Office, and it was Johann Rupert, the second richest South African after your son, who mentioned them. And he seemed to be coming to Ramaphosa's defence. And this has, see, I'm just looking online, has created quite an argument within the South African community. And I've noticed there's a lot of white South Africans who are unhappy at Trump doing this. Do you think that perhaps that's because they are fearful of the repercussions that might come up from this?
Yes. You know, Rupert, he's reportedly the wealthiest South African. You know, his wealth can be measured in what Elon pays in tax. So, but anyway, yes, it is true that the fear among white people is that if you replace this pathetic government that we already have with what would come instead, we've really got a problem on our hands. We'd have to really consider, you know, taking to the boats or standing our ground or something, because if that happened, you know, so in a way, you're quite right. The ANC, as bad as it is, seems to stand between the minorities here, let's say, and the and a rabble that have, you know, that one cannot even imagine what the result would be there. The problem at the same time is, you know, that the 8% of the country that's made up of the whites, Indians, and coloureds, they are the people who own like 80% of the country. It's not because of anything that was given to them. People have worked for it. It's a country anywhere in the world is, to a certain extent, it's my technical observation, as good as the white population that lives there. In other words, depending on how large the white population is in a country, you can get some idea of how well it'll be run. And so in Africa, you know, Zimbabwe is just a wasteland. The other countries around us, and I deal with them quite a lot, like Mozambique, Malawi, Botswana, and so on, they don't have the same employment restrictions as are applied by the ANC here. They have a very mixed public service of people, if you know what I mean.
But at the risk of sounding like a redistributionist, I mean, haven't you put your finger on the problem that people like Julius Malema, who was shown in those Trump videos, get a lot of political traction out of, which is that there is a lot of economic injustice in South Africa. And that, you know, the fact that so much, that 8% of the population owns so much of the country, is a source of great irritation and anger to the vast majority.
About 40% of the land in South Africa, which is arable and good, belongs to the state. If they want to, they can give that land to black people to farm. Unfortunately, black people are not inclined. It's not that they're bad or good or anything. It's just not in their nature to do intensive farming. You know, they do subsistence farming, but they don't do intensive farming. South Africa has intensive farms of a world standard, on a world standard. And as a result, we produce food that is probably, and I travel extensively, one of the highest quality qualities in the world. We don't have GM foods, we have real food. And this is because of our farmers. And as a result, that food's quite cheap. And one can see the results of that over the last 100 years, or rather from 1910, when the black population of South Africa was estimated to be 800,000, in 2010, it was 55 million. Mm. So the black population really flourished under those circumstances. And whereas from 1910 to 2010, the blacks, coloureds, and Indians grew from 4 million to 6 million, 400,000 to 6 million. Very small growth, if you know what I mean. So, if you, it's a really important point that I've made is that if you remove the if you remove the white farmers from South Africa, then starvation will follow. There's no question about that. Starvation has already followed in Zimbabwe, and starvation has already followed in Zambia. I've been up there. I know. I've seen it. And in Zimbabwe and Zambia, especially on the outskirts of Zambia, there is nothing living. The only living things you find are crocodiles, elephant, and hippo. And the reason is those are the things they can't kill.
You didn't mention apartheid there, and I don't want to get into a debate about the history of South Africa because I'm way out of my area of expertise. But, I mean, surely the apartheid is an important part of this political discussion, and that, you know, no sane person would want to kind of reverse apartheid against white people. But it nevertheless factors into what's going on in South African politics, and it's a very difficult legacy to deal with.
Well, you know, apartheid, in the apartheid times, each black group was given the land that was traditional to them to use. I mean, your large swathes of the country were in the hands of the blacks. The whole of Zululand was in the hands of the blacks. The whole of the Transkei, which is where the Khoisans originally lived, was given to them. The whole of the area in the northern, near the mountains in north of Pretoria was given to the Tswana. And and then, of course, all the Khoi lands along the coast here along the coast here where the Khoi had lived is Khoi land, still Khoi land. So it wasn't as though there was no land given to them. They didn't work the land that they were given. They didn't do anything with it. They simply didn't do anything with it. You know, so, so they migrated onto the areas where the white people were farming for jobs. They didn't work their own land. They didn't try and farm their own land. They didn't do that. And a good example of this is on one occasion when I was appointed to do the radio station in Lesotho by the Irish government, I flew the Irish officials down from Johannesburg Airport to Maseru, the capital of Lesotho. And Lesotho is an area, a high, very high lying area where the Sotho's managed to escape from the Zulus by living up in that mountain. They found a way to avoid the Zulus by living up there. And today it's an independent country that Britain established long ago. Anyway, as you fly down towards Lesotho from Johannesburg, Lesotho is divided from the South African side, the Free State, is divided by the Caledon River. And on the one side was the Free State, on the other side was Lesotho. And I pointed out to the Irish officials, if you look down from the air, because I flew the airplane, it was my own aircraft. If you look down on the Free State side, you have Hans Christian Andersen Meadows, like from the fairy tales, you know, of patchwork fields and colors and greens and yellows and whatever. And on the other side of the Caledon River, it looked exactly like the moon. You know, exactly like the moon. So the land on the other side, on the Lesotho side, was in fact the same as the land on the other side. But on the Lesotho side, it looked like the moon, like you were looking at the moon. If you know what I mean. So then that is an illustration that they don't work the land, you see.
I wondered if you would mind talking a little bit about your son. And there's been a lot of talk about how he's sort of out of the White House now, and that because his formal role has come to an end. And there's sort of a bit of speculation that he fell out with key members of the administration and so on. What's your understanding of that?
Well, you know, he as a private contractor, I think there's a 4 months limit. So the 4 months came up, and he's now left the team that he's got. They're busy now with auditing the Pentagon, I suppose you could call it, and that's going to take about a year. And but they are all government federal employees, the team, They're all, Elon is not a federal employee. So he had to leave. And of course, he has other things to do. And, you know, and I mean, he set the thing up and everything will proceed nicely, I think. What he's going to do now, I'm somewhat relieved myself as the father, as his father, that he may have a chance to have a bit of time for himself, you know. And but knowing him, of course, his curiosity will get the better of him, and he will probably, you know, because in his time, politics is normally quite boring. I mean, or rather, running government departments and stuff is incredibly dull. That's why good, smart people don't bother with that. But he's been, he's seen the exciting side of politics. So I imagine. So obviously, curiosity is likely to get the better of him, and he'd want to see what else might come up that he could, you know, stick his nose into, sort of thing, just out of curiosity, and to, you know, look for the, for the, for the, you know, fun or interesting thing to do. You know, I don't know. I'm not, no idea. I just, I just wish he would go on a holiday for something.
Yes.
Well, that would take 2 days.
And at the risk of being intrusive, and tell me to get lost if I am, how are your relations with him? Because I mean, from biography I've read of his life, you've had quite a complicated history, and you haven't always gone on very well.
What happened was, he wanted us to come and live in America, my second wife and our children and so on. He wanted us to come and live in America. So, you know, about, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that, we all moved to America. And my Afrikaans or South African Dutch wife, she didn't like it at all. And although they speak English, they're not English. And we're like, the Afrikaans people are also quite English in their way, if you know what I mean. They fit in more with the English people. Americans are not, are neither, if you know what I mean. They are not English in any way whatsoever. They just speak English, that's all. So she was very unhappy in America. And eventually we decided as a family, look, we've had it. We're not going to do this anymore, because Americans are workaholics. I was finding myself working at SpaceX, where I would go away for a week at a time, or if I was at home, and we had a beautiful home and everything, but if I was at home, I'd leave to go to work at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'd come back at 10 o'clock at night, including Saturdays and Sundays. And so we decided to leave. And my sons were terribly unhappy about it. And we just, we actually went, they took our passports away and after we'd been there a couple of years. And so we got temporary passports from the embassy of South Africa. And a whole lot of us flew away from America, leaving everything we had, all our clothes, all our possessions, everything we had, we left in America and came back to South Africa. And fortunately, I still had a home here, a house that I owned. Actually, a house that Ramaphosa was eventually placed in as it was a beautiful home in Pretoria as deputy president. But so I still had that home. That's about all I had when I got back here. And the boys swore they'll never speak to us again. And, you know, so I said to them, well, surely you'll get over this. They said, well, 10 years, maybe 10 years, we'll speak to you in 10 years' time. So that was the cause of the rift. It's not that exciting, actually. It's not as exciting as people would like it to be. But as time went by, things got better. And when things went rotten again was when I turned 70. Elon and Kimball came out to South Africa for my 70th birthday. They brought with them about 50 people from Hollywood. And we sequestered an entire restaurant and a block around the restaurant. And after the lunch, the one guy is like a producer or something, John Favreau. It was just before the first election that Trump stood in. He said to me with a big grin, "We understand you support Trump." So I said, "Well, yes, I do." And then the entire group broke out into uncontrollable laughter. And then eventually this guy said, "Well, why do you support Trump? Trying to control his laughter. And I said, well, he's a businessman, and I believe it's better to have a businessman than a career politician in politics. And I think it could be a very good thing. And they laughed. He said, no, they said he's a con man, he's a thief, he's a this. And they laughed their heads off. And then they all sort of drifted away after the lunch. And then my sons came to me and said to me, why couldn't you say you don't know? Or something like that. I said, well, you know, I don't get it. What's the problem? And they said, Trump is evil. Don't you get it? This is Elon telling me this. Trump is evil. What's wrong with you? And Kimball, my younger son, who's incredibly decent, I've never heard him use swear words except on that occasion, where he said to me, I'm this, I'm a that, I'm a effing this, I'm that. I never even heard him talk like that. You've embarrassed us. So that really put a bit of a dark cloud over things for a while, just for a year or so. And then we were sort of back, but we never discussed politics. So I'm probably the one who's most surprised that Elon and Kimball have done a complete turnabout as far as Trump is concerned. I mean, a complete, you know, 180 degree turn. They were Democrats because they figured the Democrats are for the underdog. And they say they learned their lesson that the Democrats are most definitely not for anybody except themselves, a few of themselves. And so they've changed their whole thing. And not only that, they've gone hell for leather in favor of Trump, which I've never bothered to say to them, why did you swear to me that time so much then? I won't do that because I'm their dad. I'm not going to embarrass them.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they don't see this. Errol, thank you very much for coming on to Americano. I believe people say that sons always embrace their father's politics in the end, and perhaps that's what happened. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to that episode of Americano. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave a review on whatever platform you are watching or listening to it on. We prefer positive reviews, although some constructive criticism is also welcome. I'd also urge you to sign up to the Americano newsletter, which I write every week. It comes out on Thursdays, and people seem to be enjoying it so far. Thank you very much to the audience. Thanks also to my producer, Natasha Feroz, for doing such a wonderful job. And speak to you next time.